Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by ToughManTry.com, Everyone.org, new concept for half marathon to 5K coming up on July 24th up in the Bay Area. RunCatalina.com, Catalina Eco Marathon coming up on Saturday, November 19th. You can check out any of our interviews on iTunes or on Babbittville.com. And of course, we're also brought to you by our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $70 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sports. And remember, endurance lives here. Our next guest, Mr. Evan Morgan. Evan, how the heck are you?
I'm doing great, Bob. It's a little early here, but it's a great way to start the day off. Chatting with you.
Love it.
Cup of coffee, right?
Exactly. Hey, so Evan, where did you grow up?
Oh, all over. I'm a citizen of the nation. I was born in New Jersey and then lived there for about 5 years, lived in the Bay Area for another 5 years, lived in Memphis, Tennessee for about four, went to high school in Boulder, Colorado, and then joined the Marines from there. Then that whole adventure,
yeah,
and then moved back to California with my wife.
So were you a military? Was your dad in the military?
No. We get that a lot, though. He was in advertising. He was in marketing. So he also liked a challenge. So he would work with a company on a new marketing campaign,
yeah,
and then he would, you know, when that challenge was over, he'd quit and
go somewhere else.
Another company, yeah.
So how hard was that as a kid to be constantly getting uprooted?
You know, I think when you have to do that, it's one of those things that you don't really know it's hard until maybe you have a conversation with someone later in life. You just adapt to it, I guess. You know, you learn how to make friends. You also learn how to cut off ties with some old ones, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like anything else. It's got its, you know, everyone's got their own perspective on life, and that definitely has affected mine. But, we were fortunate. My dad made a good living. We had a good, tight-knit family. So, I mean, we were fortunate in ways that some other families weren't. So I can't really complain.
So without a military family background, what led you to the Marines?
Well, my oldest brother, I was the youngest of three boys.
Yeah.
And my oldest brother, who's 10 years older than me, he joined the Marine Corps straight out of high school. And he was kind of the one to break the mold, so to speak. Real smart kid, but just decided he wanted to join the Marines. It was a shock, a curveball.
Yeah.
Every way my parents put it. And I went and saw his boot camp graduation when I was 8. And I had always kind of been more of a G.I. Joe kind of kid.
Right.
And seeing all the, the Marine Corps uniforms, everything, all the ceremonies, the marching, the drill, all that really sold me on it. So from that point on, that's pretty much all I wanted to do. And it ended up, funny enough, even though our father didn't serve, all three of us boys ended up joining the military. My middle brother is still in the Air Force.
Wow. So all kids went in, and dad was an advertising exec. So he must have been like, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah, he still is. Obviously proud of us.
Yeah.
He's never been the kind of, didn't really force going into the family trade, so to speak. But I think it kind of worked out funny that way. I don't know, maybe because we were used to moving around and things like that, maybe we were better suited for it than some others. I'm not sure.
That's interesting. So, you did two tours. Were you
correct.
In Iraq for both tours?
For both tours, yeah. I went to boot camp and then infantry training, and straight after graduating in infantry training, I was sent to join my unit because they had already deployed to Kuwait.
Right.
And were kind of waiting for the war to begin in 2003 in Iraq. So I was there for that. The day the war started, and that whole invasion phase and everything that people were watching back home on the TV.
Yeah.
And then that was for the better part of a year. We were there on that deployment, and then came back, spent some time in the States. That's when I met my wife in between the two deployments. Well, she was my girlfriend at the time, but
right.
And then we shipped off for the second deployment about, it was September of 2004, I think.
Right.
And it was completely different, I guess, battlefield, so to say, at that point. These IEDs, roadside bombs, had come to the forefront, and we're fighting this kind of guerrilla war at this point.
Right.
So it was a completely different place, but that was the second tour. And that's, of course, when I ended up getting injured.
And it was on basically New Year's Day, 2005?
It was, yeah. It was about, I think it was around 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Iraqi local time.
Yeah.
January 1st, 2005, so New Year's Day.
New Year's Day, and is it pronounced Al-Qaim, Iraq?
That's how I always said it.
Al-Qaim, Iraq.
Day,
And what do you remember from it? Your vehicle was hit by IED. Do you remember anything?
I remember everything, really, except for the explosion itself. I mean, I have no visual memory of the explosion. I guess I was knocked unconscious for a brief period of time. But I remember being worked on the ground, basically, as the corpsmen and my fellow Marines were, applying the life-saving first aid.
Yeah.
Stopping the bleeding and everything. Not to get too graphic, but my right leg was pretty much just blown off on detonation of the device, above the knee, about mid-thigh. And then my left leg was very badly, just kind of torn to shreds, basically, below the knee. My right eye and that sort of half of my face were really badly damaged by some of it, too. So I was in, shock at the time. So I didn't know I wasn't really registering the pain, that amount of pain, really talking kind of conversationally like you and I are now. And then just, while they put tourniquets on, stop the bleeding and all those things. Yeah. I remember them loading me on the helicopter, the Blackhawk that landed, to kind of medevac me back to the base where I could get more drastic, medical care there. And then once that happened, I arrived back at the base, they gave me some kind of sedative, I imagine. And that's when I kind of went out for the few days.
Wow. And then you end up three months at the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda.
Yeah, 3 months there. Well, so like 2 or 3 days in Germany, just kind of stabilizing to make the longer flight back to the States. And then, I ended up at the Naval Hospital in Bethesda, Maryland. And that's where I got most of the, initial surgeries. They ended up having to amputate my left leg. Unfortunately, just couldn't really save it. But they were able to keep the knee joint there, which has been a big help, which anyone familiar with amputations knows, the more joints, the better. And then, just about 40 surgeries or so, just kind of closing everything up, repairing my right eye ended up being blind, but they had to do some things to kind of repair the bones around my eye and the skin. I was there for about 3 months and then went to San Antonio to Brook Army Medical Center. And that's where they have the, one of the, at the time, I think it was one of only two of the prosthetics, departments for the military. So,
right. So when you were in, you said 40 surgeries?
Yeah, I think it was about 36.
Oh my God. So basically it's really hard to heal when every few days you're having another surgery.
Yeah, and actually, that's part of it. I mean, some of those surgeries, are more major than others. Some of them, basically, they just, when you're injured, I don't know if it's in every country they do this, but certainly in Iraq, especially by an explosive device, too, or something traumatic like that, there's not, you're not just getting a bullet or a piece of metal, you're getting the earth. Especially, you know, these roadside bombs that are buried in the ground. So every few days, they would have to essentially open you up again and do what they called a clean out or a washout, and just, you know, look for debris inside your wounds, you know, to put it bluntly. So some of those surgeries are them reopening things and just making sure their infections haven't set in. You know, a lot of, they cut my stomach open basically to look for, you know, ruptured organs and things like that. So, I mean, a lot of it is just kind of exploratory, but then some, my facial and eye reconstruction surgery was about 16 hours long. That was the big grueling one, but yeah, I mean, it was a full-time job just kind of healing.
And so you're 21 years old. And
yeah, at that point.
At that point, you're really, when you're in the Marines, your physicality is sort of who you are and what you do. How hard was just accepting your the new Evan Morgan?
You know, yeah, that's a really good point. And that set in for me, but that didn't set in until the point I was getting to, you know, work with prosthetics and things like that. Because I guess at the, you know, that first initial point, both the fact that you're stoned out of your mind on, you know, morphine and things like that half the time, but then also too that you're just so focused on healing, you know, and everything's just focused on getting you sewn up and getting you out of a hospital bed, that you don't really have a lot of time to think about, you know, your self.
Or you don't have, you're not thinking about the future so much. You're thinking about you staying in the moment on how do I recover from this?
Continuing to survive.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I just like you said, I mean, you go from being a Marine and Marines are proud. We train a lot. We try to be, you know, better than the other branches or like to think we are. So that's a big part of who we are. And also, you know, for me, I come from a tall family too. I was 6'2" tall, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm in a wheelchair. I'm the shortest guy in the room. So there was a deal. I remember the first time it really impacted me is I got out for the first time with some family members. They took me out of the hospital to kind of just, you know, remember what that was like. And I went to a restaurant and, had to go to the bathroom, and that was kind of the first time that I was confronted with the reality of the world. Before that, I was in this very sterile, very hospital environment. You know, everything was kind of made for me, but this was the first time that I was out in the world, and I was going to have to adapt. And I remember getting to the restroom by itself was a challenge, you know, chairs, tables being in the way, having to navigate through this place in a wheelchair, which is, you know, much wider than walking. And then finally get to the restroom and then look at the urinal basically and realize, wait a second, how am I going to do this?
You know,
last time I'd use a public bathroom, I'd walk up and just have
your thing,
like any other man is blessed and fortunate to be able to do, right? But I had this kind of moment of oh man, you know, this this recognizing that life was different now.
So and With Jillian, like you said, you were dating before you went over. Was there a concern? Okay, Jillian was attracted to me, Evan Morgan, the Marine. Now I'm coming back. I'm missing one leg below the knee, one above the knee, and I'm missing an eye. And I'm obviously I'm very skinny right now from all these different surgeries.
Yeah, 125 pounds.
25 pounds. Was there a concern on your part? How she would react?
It was definitely a concern. It was a concern of mine. I know my father had spoken to Jillian while I was in the hospital in Bethesda and said, you know, we'd really appreciate it if you would kind of, you know, stick with him until he's up and moving. And then, you know, if you decide to, because she was even younger than me, 19 at the time.
Yeah.
And he realized and you know, I agreed that that's a big sort of life, you know, decision to take on at 19 years old. And it was a big concern of mine. And I remember kind of saying the first time I saw her, like, you know, we can break up. It's fine. It's not a big deal. Like, I get it. you shouldn't have to deal with this. Not that I was, you know, very worried about that I was going to, you know, become an invalid or anything. I never had that thought. But just like I said, it's a big decision to take on for a 19-year-old and be with someone with a disability that severe. And, you know, fortunately, she never really once considered that. And the CAF did a great fundraising video for me a few years back. And,
yes.
And she always says in there, and it everyone always walk away remembering this one part of the video where she says, you know, basically she didn't fall in love with my legs.
Yes. That actually, so, yeah, I mean, that part of the video is something that always stays in my mind as well. I didn't.
Right, yeah.
He's the same person. He's still got the same mind. He's still got the same personality. I didn't fall in love with him for his legs. That's such a poignant line.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I was working with. So I was definitely fortunate in that regard. But yeah, there were those moments, like I said, you know, moments of doubt, of course.
Well, now,
but never for her.
Yeah. Well, that's the one that matters.
Maybe for other reasons now. I mean, now we've been married for 11 years. She'd probably tell you she's had her moments of doubt, but not because of my legs.
And did you guys get married at the hospital?
We got married at the hospital chapel in San Antonio.
Wow.
So the Texas wedding license actually has like pictures of the Alamo and stuff around it. Only in Texas.
That's wild. And then transitioning and figuring out what the military is very good about providing, obviously, the care you need and if you need equipment of some sort. But a lot of times the mentoring and finding out, okay, I'm 22 years old. What do I do now? That's sometimes a little deficient. How important was it? I'm sure there was a point where you met Nico from CAF and Operation Rebound. Talk a little bit about the mentoring and how important that aspect was for you.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. The VA is good to me when it comes to equipment, mm-hmm. and that's pretty much all I ever use them for.
Right.
They don't ask any questions. You know, you need a new hand cycle. You just tell them what they need or what you need. And as long as they know you compete or you're going to use it, they'll give it to you. It's
right.
I have no complaints with them there. But like you said, yeah, they're not going to help you spend their money, per se. And they're not going to offer to provide services for you because they're so busy, you know, filling their backlog of people who need help. So, yeah, finding your way is sort of something you have to do on your own until you can find some sort of guidance. And a lot of times that comes in the form of somebody who's been there and done that. For me, the introduction with CAF and then specifically with Operation Rebound came from SDTC, actually. Someone at OSER invited me to be on one of their relay teams for that triathlon in La Jolla. And gosh, I think it was
2006, right?
Yeah, it would have been in 6.
Yeah. So that's you were injured January 1st, 2005. So we're talking basically a year and a half later.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty, it was still pretty soon after. And we had a pool growing up. Like I said, I was always lucky in some regards. And so I like to swim. They asked me if I wanted to do the swim, but I'd never done anything remotely close to that distance in the ocean. I mean, I'd swim in the ocean before, but just kind of like a kid snorkeling, those kind of things.
Right.
But I was like, okay, you know, why not? I like a challenge. And decided to do it and trained in my parents, my in-laws' pool, basically just kind of, you know, the outdoor pool, swim a lot of laps, a lot of very short laps back and forth. And, did the swim and just fell in love with it immediately. And part of that was the competition, the confidence, those kind of things. But the other part was all of a sudden being around this. I mean, that you know, obviously,
yes.
You know, but that event is just like, you know, being home for us people.
You realize you're not alone. You realize
you're not alone and that there's a lot going on in this little subculture, and that there's a lot that can be done. I mean, get in there and not only people, you know, suiting up and going down that start down in the cove with just all these people sitting on their butts because they don't have legs, you know, which is always makes the odd man out at the other triathlons. But not only that, but then being up in the little village area and just kind of hearing these people talk about, you know, oh yeah, and next summer I'm going to be swimming the English Channel, or like, you know, and just all these people trying to be the first at something, you know, first person to summit
Everest and all the stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, geez, you know, and I mean, I remember walking away from that with just the biggest confidence boost in the world. And then, I mean, at first I was dealing just with CAF proper, and it wasn't until, I don't know if Operation Rebound.
You were one of the first guys.
I mean, I think I was, yeah, I was one of the first. So I my first grant and my first race predated Nico. But getting to travel around with him once that program really got off the wheels and go to some of those. I mean, I went back to Brooke Army Medical Center with him and did a clinic there with Paul Martin and Carlos Molina. And I mean, giving back like that and getting to take on that mentorship role, almost like it was, that was great for me. You know, being able to do that was worthwhile for me in a huge way. And just being able to kind of be that person who I had found and turn it over again and keep those wheels turning. I mean, the way it's going now, these guys are, you know, months after being injured, they're
they're in the ocean.
Met Eric again. Well, now it's funny because now when you interviewed me down at Oceanside a couple months ago, these guys had been, you know, one guy was a captain or a major, I think.
Yeah.
And but he was, you know, probably 6 years younger than me. I realize I'm getting to be old now. I mean, these guys are, they're getting them in these sports so quickly now. And it's great to have been a small part of that in some way. I mean, the whole thing, I think you find your mentors when you can, and CAF and sports have been huge in that for me, but you also can get something out of sort of being a mentor back and giving back, and just this whole process has its rewards for sure.
So in 2009, you did the Ironman 70.3 there in Oceanside, not just part of it, did the whole thing.
Yeah, I think I had done the year before I did the swim again.
Yep.
Because I know I've done the swim three times now. But yeah, in 2009 I did the full. That was the first, I think, and last 70.3 I did before my retirement or sabbatical or whatever you want to call it. But then I'd done a number of Olympic distance too. But yeah, that was an interesting race to do it, because being on Camp Pendleton like that again, it's funny, I keep coming back to this theme of Marines. It's like it won't ever let me go.
Yeah.
But doing that bike race or that bike portion of the race and going through the base. I mean, you go right through the infantry school that I trained at. You go through, you know, different sections of the base. That was a blast. It's a heck of a ride, though.
It's brutal.
Three hills. Yeah. I remember being on a hand cycle and coming in, it's all going great. You know, you're looking over, oh, there's the ocean. Oh, this is great. I'm feeling good. This is fantastic. What a beautiful day. You know, and then all of a sudden it's like I run into a wall, and I realize that that's not a wall. It's just a very, very steep incline here. And I look up and people are off their bikes just walking up the hill.
Yeah.
That's something else.
Well, and you're going, I don't really have that option.
Yeah, I don't have that option. So
I've got to figure out, hopefully I got enough gear here to get myself up this thing. That is wild.
Just trying not to roll back downhill at times.
So you have two little ones now?
I have three.
Three?
Yeah, I have an 8-year-old girl and a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old boy.
Oh, my God, you are a busy guy. Because from the last number of years, you've been busy being a dad, right?
Yeah. I think it would have been, well, let's see. So Sophie, my oldest, was born in 2007 and was still racing and made the Paratri team, the USAT team.
Yep.
And then basically it was just the traveling for those races, you know, having to go to
sure.
Chicago or, you know, Minneapolis or wherever.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Was just, it was for us being new parents, it was a lot
yes.
for us
yep.
At that time. It was a big change for us because we're very, very nuclear in the way we live. You know, I'm retired. My wife is, so we're a stay-at-home mom essentially. So at this point, we were always a unit together.
Sure.
And that travel was a shock to our system. And so I decided basically to take a break.
Yep.
Indefinitely. And yeah, we just started raising kids. So we made a couple more, and that's kind of been our lives for the last 2 years.
Love it.
And they've been doing fantastic. It's paying its dividends, that's for sure. The more time you can spend with your kids, the better.
Now, do you walk with prosthetics, or you spend most of your time in a chair?
I spend most of my time in the chair.
Yeah.
And that, again, has been a sort of a byproduct of racing for me. I was, like I said, being so tall before,
yes.
that was one of the biggest changes in my life, having to kind of get cut down in half more or
right.
less. And so, you know, I would try to walk with prosthetics everywhere I went once I learned how to. And for some reason, just based on what I have left, you know, as far as tissue goes, as far as, you know, where my bones end and things like that, I was never able to get past a certain point as far as distance or time went wearing the prosthetics. I always put it like this. If I was to go to a grocery store, you know, if I was going by myself in and out, then that would be fine. But if I was going on a long grocery trip, maybe say with my wife who likes to browse down every aisle, then I would have to, you know, eventually go sit in the car or
right.
take my wheelchair with me. So it was getting to where I would take prosthetics and wheelchair most every place I went.
Which is a hassle.
Which is a hassle. I mean, when it came down to it, it was just impractical. And so after one, gosh, I don't know if it was directly after my first race or so at some point, though, when I started passing people who, you know, were able-bodied, and basically what I was in was a, you know, some form of a wheelchair, either a hand cycle or a racing wheelchair, it sort of gave me a confidence boost to realize, okay, you know, I'm still a person with
right.
abilities, even if I'm in a chair. And so I just kind of made the switch to a chair, and really, it's just more practical. I take one thing with me.
It's a lot easier.
I need
yeah.
a chair. It's a lot easier. I feel like I have more abilities in the chair, although I can't, you know, stand up. Prosthetics still are, you know, fairly limited in mobility as
yep.
far as agility goes and things like that, although they've made some amazing leaps and bounds. So, yeah, it just makes more sense for me. I spend most of my time in the chair now.
I remember one of my buddies was telling me the worst part for him, and I'm sure for you, he says, my world became butts and belt buckles. Yeah,
that has its pros and cons. I guess it depends on where you are.
good point.
yeah, it is funny being in a chair. Just completely, you don't notice it when you're, you know, until you're in one. But everything's different. The range at which people hear you because their ears are at a different level is completely different. So, you know, saying "excuse me,"
interesting.
You have to really speak up. It changes. Yeah, it changes a lot of things. But like anything else in life, you can adapt to it.
Love it. So, and yeah. you came in in April and did the 70.3 again in Oceanside. And
yeah.
it's been a few years, man. How did
it
feel?
Been a few years. It felt good. You know, actually, basically what happened is I was at my gym. I've tried to stay in shape as best as possible, and I was at my gym one day on a Saturday, and I had forgotten which Saturday it was. And I was there on the, well, they have like a hand cycle, basically, kind of like a I think they call it an upper body ergometer or something
right.
like that, right?
Yep.
So, yeah. And on the TV, it comes the Iron Man broadcast on NBC. And it was this last, it was Carlos's return. And I just was filled with this purpose, basically, and decided then and there. I mean, my I was starting really cranking away on the UBE, but decided right there that I wanted to meet that challenge to go to Kona. That had always kind of been, you know, like everyone else says, like, you know, that's always been that sort of mecca, and I never got to do it before, not even close, really. So, yeah, I'm in the best. I've matured over this, you know, as having kids and turning 30 will do to you. I am more focused than I was before. I'm in better shape than I was before. And to that point, I mean, I hadn't swam anything past, you know, playing Marco Polo since probably my last race in 2009. And I came in 1 second under my last swim time. So I did that, the same Oceanside swim 1 second faster, having not swam. So that tells me, okay, if I get back in a pool and I start swimming laps again and, you know, a real pool, and start doing, you know, working on smaller races, building, getting the form back, getting my breath back, I can become something better than I was before. So, yeah, I'm setting my sights on Kona next year. And
so 2017, you're thinking
2017.
Kona.
2017, yeah.
Wow, that is really exciting.
I had to go in and order. They changed the rules for me, so I can't compete in the kneeling hand cycle anymore. So I had to go and get a
long
seat. I just came back from Florida and get one of those recumbent hand cycles. And, yeah, I'm getting everything all in line, getting back up with CAF and getting all the, you know, training help I need.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm excited to get back into it. That was being around it back again there in Oceanside this past month was, you know, just like I never left, more or less.
Well, and the cool part is now your kids are getting to the age where they can understand what you're doing. It becomes almost like a family thing.
It definitely is. For those trips like San Diego, you know, it's a nice little family vacation. And, you know, we still have a 2-year-old, so we still have but we're more skilled as parents now, you know, and if not more skilled, we're more used to the ups and downs that, you know, we know how to pack for trips for those, you know, Murphy's Law type situations. So, yeah, I mean, it was great. It was a fantastic trip and just great to see everyone at CAF again. It was like nothing ever changed.
Right.
You know, but yeah, I'm really excited to get back into the sport.
Love it. Cool. So do you have any events this summer?
I don't have anything planned right now. I think I'm going to try, it's funny because now, you know, I'm basically waiting on the bike. The bike is so different as far as the mechanics of it, you know.
The leverage and all the rest of that. Yeah,
the position is a complete 180 from where I was before, being able to rock the whole body into it. That I really need to, and that takes a little while for them to make one and ship it to you. So I'm kind of dependent on that, and I want to really make sure that I don't jump in anything. But I'll probably start doing some, you know, middle distance type stuff once I get that in the fall. And then I jumped in for a couple spots at Malibu just to test that out.
Oh, nice. Good.
Yeah. Well, that one's always fun. The wife likes going to that one, too, because, you know,
Matthew McConaughey. The stars are there. Something.
Yeah.
That is cool.
Yeah, and then maybe try to get into something in the Ironman distance in early next year. I don't know. I haven't planned out the race schedule yet. I want to get my fitness up before I get there, but... Every day is an adventure.
Evan, it's so great to have you back, man. It's funny because I kept saying to Nico, I haven't seen Evan in a long time. He goes, yeah, he's a dad right now. I'm like, okay, cool. And then seeing you there in Oceanside, it was just such a treat. You'd never left. I was like, oh, there's Evan again. Love that.
Yep. You always know if Bob's there, it's like, okay, this is the real deal. It's back to normal.
Now, being there at the beginning of Operation Rebound and seeing what it's grown to now, what was your reaction?
Oh, man, that was amazing. It was to see, gosh, I can't even remember what the number was. You'd know better than I would, but to hear the fundraising.
Oh, yeah, over 70 million now and everything we've done. I know, it's crazy. I know.
You know, that blows my mind. And that's exciting on one hand. You know, but sometimes I don't know if I'm the first one to say this. In some ways, I feel bad because I think in a lot of ways we have advantages over, you know, athletes that aren't, you know, coming from the military background. Because, like I said, we have that, you know, my hand cycle gets paid for by the
sure.
VA.
Right.
And so I don't necessarily need that, you know, in that sense. But
right.
So I don't want Operation Rebound to take too much money away from people that aren't working with this great, you know, basically insurance that we have. But still just the message that's getting out there, the support that's getting out there. I unfortunately see a lot of people end up today in this kind of, they've actually made almost a cottage industry out of it, like something they call disgruntled veteran. And it's like ironically playing on the idea that, you know, we veterans are maladapted to society and just kind of cranky and pissed off all the time, which to a certain extent is true, but I don't think that's any way to, you know, get back into society and be a
no.
healthy person, you know, if you're just angry at the world all the time. And, you know, I always like to think back to World War II veterans. It was just, you know, okay, now we're home. We kind of move on.
Exactly.
You know? And so it's great to see these success stories become so much more prominent, like with Operation Rebound.
Yep.
You know, instead of having 30 guys that have gotten grants and are spread out all over the country, you have, you know, 15 Operation Rebound people competing at one event at the same time.
Yes.
Well, you know, that's great for the world to see.
Well, it's a success story. It's a success story
exactly.
that basically the prescription becomes exercise rather than medication. And
exactly.
At the end of the day, the racing is nice, but it's all about, I think, the quicker you get people back in the sport after the trauma, the less depression, the less medication, just everything is better.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that 100%. And like I said, the competition, yeah, in a way, it fuels, I think, the emotional feeling, but it is secondary when you get down to it, to that kind of just the purpose it gives you.
Love it. Hey, Evan, thank you so much for taking so much time. Please give my best to Jillian and the kids.
Oh, I will, Bob. Thank you. Thanks for having me. I feel honored to be among the names there on your catalog shows.
And
if you can edit something decent out of this.
No, it'll be great. And for folks out there, as we're celebrating Memorial Day, definitely check out online the video on Evan Morgan and Jillian. It's really spectacular. We, again, are brought to you by toughmantry.com. Everyone, EveryWon.org. Half marathon and 5K coming up on July 24th up in the Bay Area. RunCatalina.com. Catalina Eco Marathon coming up on Saturday, November 19th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $70 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. That's challengedathletes.org. And check out any of our interviews on iTunes or on BabbittVille.com. And remember, endurance lives here.